Welcome, ladies and gentlemen, friends, listeners, and open-minded people everywhere who are brave to go against the grain and follow along in our discussions as we ask questions about some of the most sacred of cows and challenge history and re-examine the lies that we've been told to believe in. You are listening to Red Eyes Radio. I'm Henrik Palmgren, and I hope you have had a good week so far. Thank you for tuning in. It's great to have you back again with us. This program is dedicated to asking questions and investigate those aspects in the mainstream and alternative that almost everyone seems to be bowing down to and falling in line with, or maybe just avoiding altogether. We do this no matter if it's uncomfortable or controversial. If there is one issue that we should have in common and agree with, despite disagreements over other issues, it should be, in my view, on the ability to question our history so that we may understand our present and the charges that we face in the eyes of others. Our website is redeyescreations.com, and today we have a return guest from many years ago, Kyle Hunt, who was with us on the synchromystic path and has consequently turned his attention to more pressing issues related to identity, hidden agendas, questions of ethnicity, and how globalism and the emerging monoculture is destroying history and heritage of all peoples. We are going to tackle some heavy subjects today and discuss suppressed statistics, historical cover-up, lies, and fabrications of our past. I hope you find the discussion challenging and engaging. So let's get to our guest. Welcome back to Red Eyes Radio, Kyle Hunt. Great to talk to you again. It was many, many years ago, but it's nice to have you back again. How are you?
I'm doing well. Thanks a lot for having me. I think that you've been doing some great work at Red Eyes Creations, and Lana has been putting out some phenomenal shows as well. So it's really a pleasure and an honor to be here.
Thank you, Kyle. Now, last time you were with us, I kind of wanted to bring it in from this angle. We were talking a lot about synchromysticism. You have been doing your work over at, I think it was Star Theory, and you still posted actually quite a bit after that point as well. I was in there just briefly to take a look, and I saw some posts from like 2012, 2013. I wanted to talk about what direction you developed since we last spoke, and how you came from synchromysticism into the kind of things that you've been doing over at Renegade Broadcasting. So why don't we just kind of tell that story a little bit, if you will?
Sure. Well, one of the things I brought up at the end of the first hour that I did with you in 2009 was how in one of these Hollywood movies named Astro Boy, they had this big robot and on it was written Zog, Z-O-G. And I thought that was very interesting because I had I'd been familiar for a little while as to what Zog stands for. It stands for Zionist Occupied Government. So I had been looking into Jewish control over Hollywood and the government just a bit at that point. But after that, I really started to get into that a little bit more fully, actually going and looking at the various names of people who are controlling the banking system, who are in charge of the IMF, the Federal Reserve, the World Trade Organization. I was looking at who is controlling much of the government and security services. I was looking into, of course, AIPAC, the Israel lobby that wields incredible control in the United States. And I was looking into, all different aspects, corporate control. And I was finding that huge amount of the people that were in key positions, not just in America, but in the Western world in general, are Jewish. They want us to believe that they just happen to be Jewish, that it's not some kind of conspiracy, that it's not the learned elders, the protocols of the learned elders of Zion in play here, that it's just because Jews are pretty smart, they're good at communications, and they're just excelling in these various fields. It's not that they have some kind of cabal and they are working against our interests, when in fact it seems that all of these various institutions that they're controlling are working directly against our interests. And it's not only Jews who are playing a part in here, but it seems like they are taking a leading role. For example, in immigration, an issue we'll get to later, Jews have been pushing incredibly hard for many years now, decades, to open up the borders of all Western European countries and to flood them with non-white immigrants. And I was exposing this. I was a broadcaster on Oracle Broadcasting for some time, and I was really getting into this issue when many people did not want to even touch it. And the reason that a lot of people don't want to touch it is because you'll get a label thrown at you, anti-Semite. It's incredible. This group has a specific type of a specific word that is used for anybody that criticizes them. And there's a great Voltaire quote that people should be really, really considering. To learn who rules over you, simply find out who you are not allowed to criticize.
Yep, that's right.
And is it the Illuminati? No, we're kind of allowed to criticize them. Germanic death cults? Hollywood's always attacking the Germanic people. The New World Order? No, that's become pretty cliche. That's out there in the mainstream media. The Bilderberg Group? The mainstream media covers them now. You're allowed to criticize all these groups. Democrats, Republicans, you can criticize them. Who can't you criticize in today's world? Well, as I mentioned, Jews, but also now, because of the political correctness agenda, you can't criticize homosexuals. You can't criticize immigrants or other minority groups. Basically, if you're white, especially, you can't criticize anyone or anything unless it's a part of their narrative. So this really pissed me off. I was not very happy to realize that this group had come to power and was acting against our interest. And in their own media, they brag about it. They think it's just great how much control they have. You can have a magazine like Moment. They had a cover story some years ago about how Jews run Hollywood. So what? Joel Stein,
exactly. LA Times. I remember that clearly, right? That article. Yeah.
He said the same thing. But when somebody like Mel Gibson says it because he's not a Jew, then that's anti-Semitism. When somebody like Gary Oldman comes out and talks about the Jewish control of Hollywood, hey, he should know, he's been in the industry for a long time. Then you have the ADL, the Anti-Defamation League head, Abe Foxman, saying that this is just anti-Semitic rhetoric and it's promoting a false stereotype. Well, I've got the charts of ownership of these media corporations. That it's all color-coded too, of who's a Jew and who's not a Jew. And I'll tell you, the Jews like Joel Stein and Moment Magazine, they're not lying when they say that Jews run Hollywood. And so it's not anti-Semitism. It's not furthering a false stereotype to call a spade a spade.
That's right. Yeah, I was surprised by this too when Gary Oldman came out and talked about it. Not at first, of course, but it's like, yeah, he's right, because he actually referenced what he had been reading at the time, which was Neil Gabler's book, Hollywoodism, and it's actually based on that same documentary that I really urge people to look at, Hollywoodism, Jews, Movies, and the American Dream, that clearly, and without any kind of issues for debate, really demonstrates how they were running the major studios, how that tradition have continued and everything else. So I never really understood why this is such a touchy subject. Why is this such an issue when it's like, it's out there and it's known and yet people are denying it, and ADL and Abe Foxman comes along and tries to say that it's furthering stereotypes and everything else. What do you think the agenda behind that is? That when we think about, okay, so they're admitting it on one end, but then they're denying it on the other, and basically criminalize people who are talking about him. And look at how Gary Oldman had to, you know, crawl on his knees and apologize to be able to be let back into the industry again, you know?
Well, it really goes to show that you are not able to criticize these people. You can't even really have any kind of political discourse about this topic. If you oppose Israel, then you are an anti-Semite. You should lose your job. You will never. You should never work in politics again. We don't tolerate such bigotry. That's pretty much the line that they put out. But we have the Democratic Party here in America and the Republican Party, and they don't agree on a lot of issues, but they sure do agree on the support that we need to give to Israel. Billions and billions of dollars each year going to Israel, and unlike the aid that's given to other countries, they can spend this however they want. It's a blank check. There's no earmarks to this. Right. We're just giving an absurd amount of money to the largest diamond trader in the world, Israel. They're incredibly wealthy, have an incredible amount of control over various industries, and yet we're giving them billions of dollars in welfare while people in the United States are starving, are homeless. They've had their homes taken by banks. While just some years ago, trillions of dollars went to bail out international banks. It's just it's a very saddening situation to see. And that's why we need to highlight just exactly what's happening and who's behind it. We need to have this conversation started. And that's what I was working to do at Oracle. And finally, I'm starting to see that more and more people are getting it. And that's what happens when you really, are unafraid of dealing with these taboo topics. And, it's something that really it hits you in the face. Once you see a little bit of evidence for it, you realize, oh, wow, now it makes a bit of sense. You understand why they've been putting out movie after movie, making Jews into the eternal victim and the eternal good guy. And anybody who's white and especially blonde is portrayed as the most evil villain, or they're just a dumb, ditzy sex machine, like they like to portray the blonde women.
Sure. Yeah, that's right.
And of course, we have movie after movie dealing with Nazis as the most evil people to ever walk the face of the earth. And just movie after movie about the Holocaust and 6 million and the rest. But we never, ever hear about the 70 plus million white people that died in the Second World War, or the enforced famine, the Holodomor of the Ukrainian people,
right.
the mass genocide committed by Stalin of his own people in the Soviet Union, or Mao Zedong, what he did in China. No, actually, you have people within the American administration praising Mao Zedong. A number of people within Barack Obama's administration came out and said they view him as a hero, that they take examples from him. So you can support people who murdered tens and tens of millions of their own. That's just fine under our politically correct standards, as long as you don't say anything bad about Jews or say anything positive about the German people or the Third Reich. So it's very one-sided view of the world and a one-sided view of history that we've been given. So I've just really been focusing on showing people who we're not allowed to criticize. But along with this, we also should be thinking about, I made up kind of my own quote here. To learn who is being destroyed, dispossessed, or oppressed, simply find out who you're not allowed to support.
Yeah, that's a good one. Right.
Who are you not allowed to support in the world today?
Europeans, I'd say.
That's it. That's it completely.
Yep.
Standing up for white interests will get you fired from jobs. It will get you ostracized from your community, from family, from friends. You'll be labeled all sorts of different things: racist, hater, bigot, neo-Nazi, Klansman, and the rest. Even though you're just bringing up facts, you're bringing up logical arguments, they just don't want to hear it. Because everybody's been programmed emotionally to react to things emotionally, and they don't really know about real history. They only know about the false history that has been indoctrinating the Western world through movies. And most people don't even know what the textbooks say. Much of that is, you know, they're omitting many things in the textbooks, and some of it outright lies, but they don't even know what's in the textbooks. They really only get their worldview from Hollywood and the television and magazines and newspapers, which are controlled by Jews for the most part. If you're talking about the mainstream and some of the alternative outlets, a majority of the control is in Jewish hands. And well, they only make up 2% of the American population. So it seems that they have some Jewish privilege that they need to check, but maybe we can get to that a little bit later.
Right.
I'm talking about how European people, white people, are being disenfranchised, how you're not supposed to support them. This is kind of the second big taboo. You can't criticize or even question what Jews are doing in your country, even if you find it completely deplorable. And you definitely cannot stand up and take a pro-white point of view. And what I came to realize is that this is a very, very serious situation we're in. And they've put in legal frameworks to basically genocide the white populations of the Western world. And I'd like to get into that term later, because it's a very controversial
right.
term,
yep.
but it can be backed up. But let's just start at a basic level of civil rights. The former chairwoman for the U.S. Commission on Civil Rights, Mary Frances Berry, stated, "Civil rights laws were not passed to protect the rights of white men and do not apply to them." So all those civil rights laws that were put through, well, it's working against white people entirely. White people do not benefit from these civil rights whatsoever. In essence, you could even say that white people don't have civil rights. If you just consider that we're basically not able to have real free speech, even in America, we have the First Amendment, just because of the consequences that will happen if you do speak out. When you realize that we're being discriminated against through affirmative action, where everybody but white people is given a leg up, this is anti-white discrimination. This is prejudice, and this is very unfair. This actually is one of the things that has led to white people having such a reduced birth rate, because we're not able to have the same kind of standard of living that we once used to have. White people are being forcibly assimilated as well at the same time. So this was first done, at least the last phase of this, was started during desegregation. And it was done at the point of a gun, with bayonets attached to these guns.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And now these minority groups actually claim a legal right to white children. So basically, this means that they get white children bussed into their schools so as to help try to bring up the level of their education. White people don't have a real say in this. When this all was taking place during the civil rights era, and there were race riots in different cities and all sorts of turmoil, white people just took to fleeing. This was white flight. But now, because of the amount of immigration that's coming in, because of housing and urban development here in the United States, HUD, they're spending billions of dollars to find out which areas are too white and to diversify them. Now,
yeah.
let me just talk about this diversity. This diversity that they're putting forth, all it really means is less white people. That's all diversity means. Diversity in the workforce means less white people. Diversity in your neighborhoods means less white people. And it doesn't mean, diversity does not mean that we want to take white people and black people and move them into Chinatown.
Right. Yep.
That's fine. It doesn't mean trying to bring in Asians and put them into a black neighborhood. That they don't care about that kind of diversity. The only diversity they care about is destroying homogenous white communities.
Like we saw out of, I think it was Portland most recently, actually, a couple of news stories came out of there that it was deemed too white, and it was horrible that there were so many white people in Portland up in Washington State, right? So there we go. Oh, Oregon, sorry.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, well, this is happening all over. Honestly, all over. And if you stand up and say anything against it, again, you're labeled a racist, a bigot.
Yep.
And there's just no room for you in this new multicultural rainbow nation.
Now, let me pause you there for a little bit. I want to backtrack to a couple of things that you said and keep in mind where you were, and we can pick up there from later. But I wanted to talk a little bit more about the one-sided view of history. I've always found that really fascinating how it is that a lot of people, it seems like, in the so-called truth movement or alternative movement are very much kind of restricted in what capacity they can and are willing to look into history overall, but specifically, of course, World War history, be it that the First or the Second World War. And the fact that what always has puzzled me, because I'm a history buff, I love history, I want to try to figure out what happened, what was the reasoning, and I've realized that it is an endless amount of not only disinformation, but also an endless amount of material overall that you actually can go through and realize and discover and learn about. But there seems to be certain issues that are taken even within the alternative for granted, which saddens me quite a bit, because I've realized, you know, as we have people like Mark Weber and other people they're doing good work in terms of, you know, historical revision and looking at things once again and looking at it from hopefully outside of the perspective of complete propaganda, you know what I mean? But why do you think it is that so many people are suckered in and swallow the version that they've been given, be it that, you know, through the Schindler's Lists, you know, those kinds of movies, or whether it's whatever they, you know, say to you in the history books in class, you know? Is there an emotional programming, as you said there? There's a willingness. I always find that people want to believe in a black and a white history because it simplifies things and it makes it, you have a clear enemy and people actually feel good about knowing who that is. That's kind of my take on it. What do you think about that, Kyle?
It's interesting you use the words black and white history, because that's exactly what Steven Spielberg did with Schindler's List. He made it into a black and white grainy type of film because he explicitly stated that he wanted it to seem like a documentary. And this is what people, even if just if it's on a subconscious level, that's how they registered this film, that it wouldn't be on the screen if at least it didn't have some kind of factual basis. And, you know, most people are not going to actually go in and look into the revisionist literature that's out there, the revisionist videos. And there's so much. And this is very saddening for me here in America to see how unwilling many people are to even touch this topic, because they're still legally able to question this.
Exactly. My point, exactly. Yeah.
In most parts of the Western world, you will be thrown in jail for up to 5 years, I think it is.
Yeah, I think it's even more. I mean, look at how many years didn't Ernst Zundel spend in prison? And David Irving didn't do that many years, I think. But nonetheless, Zundel has spent many, many years in prison.
Yeah, and he wasn't even charged when he was first put in jail, in prison in the United States, moved up to Canada, multiple facilities, and then shipped over to Germany.
That's right. Yeah.
And even his attorney in Germany, Sylvia Stoltz, was thrown into jail for defending him too vigorously.
Oh boy.
She did jail time for defending her client, which is her obligation.
Yeah.
And it goes to show that they don't care about the facts at all.
No. Well, something is terribly wrong in that picture. And I mean, what as you opened the quote by Voltaire with there, you know, what is the reasoning behind the fact that you cannot look into this historically? There has to be, if truth is truth, why not let people run with it and discover what they discover? Because if as I said, if truth is truth, then you'll come to the same conclusion that they've been given to us all this time, correct?
Exactly. Well, truth does not need laws in place to support it. Only lies do.
Yeah.
And that's pretty much what we're up against, is they have put forth all of these different lies, whether it's about the Holocaust, and they have their 6 million number. And if you say 5,999,000 Jews died in the Holocaust, you're a Holocaust denier and you should be thrown in jail. How dare you? Even though they had to revise the Auschwitz memorial stone that said that 4 million Jews had died there. Well, a lot of evidence came out, and well, we had to bump it down, and then we bumped it down again. So maybe it's somewhere over a million. Well, why hasn't that 6 million number changed at all? We lost a couple million dead Jews at Auschwitz. Why aren't we down to somewhere like 4 million Jews died there? And again, why aren't we hearing about the tens and tens of millions of people who died in the Soviet Union, in the gulags, who died under Mao Zedong, who died under communism around the world? Well, it's because a lot of our leaders in the Western world are very sympathetic to communism and are probably actually members of the Communist Party, if not card-carrying. At least they're cultural Marxists.
Mm-hmm.
And and so that just infuriates me, because we had such loss of life. Europe was absolutely decimated.
Yeah.
And all that anybody seems to care about because of these movies and these news articles to this day, talking about, oh, we chased down this Nazi guard who committed all these atrocities. He's 90 some years old. Now he's going to be held, you know, he's going to be brought to justice. People only really, when they think about genocide, they think about Jews. They don't think about the Armenian genocide and all the other genocides that have happened to people throughout history. And this is how our history has been weaponized against the white European. This is just one of the ways. There are many other ways that we could definitely get into, though.
Does much of the current arguments and I guess critique really against history as it stands hinge on the Second World War? I mean, that's kind of how I see it, and that's why one of the reasons it needs to be protected in such a ferocious way with these laws and everything else in place, that even if you go to the extent of just asking questions, like Bishop Richard Williamson did. He actually did an interview with I think it was Swedish television, but it was in was it in Germany when he did the interview or something like that? I'm not sure. But I mean, look at what happened to him. We had the article up on the website, and he just basically asked, like, why is he not allowed to just ask questions about it? He hasn't drawn any conclusions. He hasn't said anything. He hasn't, you know, it's exhibited any kind of hatred towards anybody. It's nothing like that whatsoever. He's just basically saying, I have questions about this, and I think that we need to re-examine if this many people died or not during the Second World War. And on that basis alone, he's completely ousted. And look at what's taken, you know, what happened to him. It's just atrocious to me, you know?
No, you can question any other historical event. You can throw out wild theories about all sorts of different things, mass slaughters. Nothing is really taboo for you to question other than the Holocaust. For the most part, that's what it seems like. And really, I know of no other event that has this legal shield against questioning. So that should throw up some red flags to anybody who's really searching for the truth, that this is something that needs to be investigated further. And this isn't to say that there weren't some Jews that were harshly treated during the Second World War, that there wasn't animosity between some of the German people and some of the Jewish people.
Well, of course. I mean, look at what happened before. The reason why the Second World War broke out, all of that had to do with a lot of animosity of what happened within Germany at that time, and the intense, fighting and the intense, basically, propaganda. Look at Judea declares war on Germany, the boycott of German goods, etc. I mean, this
1933,
was, exactly,
well before the war.
Yeah.
And you had the Weimar Republic, where the German people were absolutely decimated. They were committing suicide at incredible rates. And what actually happened with the Third Reich is that the German people regained their morale, their morals, and their economic livelihood. And I think a lot of the reason that we're conditioned to absolutely hate anything to do with Germany, especially from that time period, is because if we're to exclude the wartime, if we're just to focus basically in 1933 to 1939, that lays out a fairly good blueprint for how to take a country from economic ruin and hardship to a state where they're thriving at an incredible level that they had not even thought possible.
Yeah.
And I'm not necessarily saying that national socialism of the variety that they had is for every country or could solve the problems of every country.
Yeah.
But there are good things that can be learned from that. One of which is to do away with this this usury system and to actually have a currency that is based upon the production of based upon the labor of the citizenry, and to have a government that's looking out for the best interests of its people. Now, the Third Reich is definitely not without some criticisms of what they did, but yeah. It's undeniable the programs that they had for their people, for their workers, whereas the Soviet Union claimed to be the workers' paradise, and it was absolute hell. National Socialist Germany actually did appear to be a workers' paradise, where they were going on these state-funded cruise ships up to Norway and Sweden and elsewhere. And this was the first time many of the German people ever even left their country. They had this
right.
Strength Through Joy program, where you actually had a government that wanted to see its people happy, wanted to have programs where they were in good health, good spirits, and it did wonders for them. So I really do think a lot of the Holocaust propaganda is to get us to completely turn away from the good things that were done during the Third Reich, and also the absolute disgusting atrocities that were committed against the German people during the war and after. And I'm talking about the firebombing of Dresden, yeah. of Hamburg, of Berlin, and all these other civilian bombings that yeah. were carried out by the Allies. And I'm talking about right towards the end of the war and after, the rape and the torturing of the German girls, women, and grandmothers, especially by the Soviet forces, and all of the other disgusting things that happened, like Dwight D. Eisenhower's death camps,
yeah.
which were open-air prisons for the German soldiers, who weren't even treated as prisoners of war, but rather as criminals who were left out to die without food, without shelter, in the most horrendous conditions, where they wouldn't even let the Red Cross in. So this is the kind of material that people need to become aware of if they're going to understand what really happened in World War II and why we're supposed to just completely accept the official narrative of it and not even look into anything else.
Well, exactly. I mean, what people forget as well, these were wartime conditions. This is you won't be able to pull out of a conflict of this nature and then try to say that one side is like brilliant heroes and the other ones are like Satan incarnate. I mean, it just doesn't work like that. That's such a simplification of history that it's an insult to everybody who has a brain. I mean, look at the Versailles Treaty, the way that tried to pin all the blame on Germany after the First World War. Basically, arguments were flying around turning the entire country into the farmland for the rest of the other European countries, pretty much, you know, and this, of course, led to an uprising of the people itself. And I think that if there's anything that really is resented here, it is just what you said before, the ability to actually stand after a defeat, if you will, like this, to actually stand up on its own two feet again and trying to regain some kind of, you know, pride, if you will, to that extent. And that's why I think the whole world descended on Germany eventually, because if you want to see where the real power lies in the world, you know, try to challenge them and try to do something different, and you'll see absolutely, you know, hell cave in on you. And that's, I think, what we mm-hmm. saw. And I mean, we know about the quotes of people who hated Germany beforehand, Churchill and these books were written up how Germany must perish and everything else. I forget his name, Kaufman, I think. And it's like tons of material like this that lies in the backdrop of this, that it was an ideological, and in that regard, a racial conflict against the German people itself, that was so tremendously hated. And people just, they don't know this. They have no clue about this material or that it even exists, which is my, you know, which I hate so much. Like, try to realize that it's an endless amount of material that lies as the backdrop of this that you have to know and learn to understand why these conflict arose to begin with, you know?
Mm-hmm. Well, we're given such a simplistic view where the only driving motivation for the German people was their hatred of Jews. They were willing to spend all of this fuel to gas and to burn up millions and millions of Jews while their aircraft were lacking fuel, I guess.
Right.
While they had a war on multiple fronts that they were not able to wage effectively because they didn't have the proper resources. And yet they just hated the Jews so much that they're going to expend all of their resources to come up with the final solution. And you mentioned Germany must perish. That's the only real documentation of a final solution that can be found from that time period. And well, the final solution that is detailed there is just destroying the German people, sterilizing them, killing them. No. And making sure that they are never, ever able to rise again. I believe the New York Times actually reviewed that piece of favorably. Thought, oh yeah, right. this is pretty good. Basically, it was like a modest proposal, but they were being serious instead of satirical.
Right. Yeah. Oh boy. Well, there we go. Exactly. No, it's a good point though. I mean, just this concept that. Even at a time when Germany was fighting, you know, on two fronts, they were basically losing resources, sanctions were put against them. They had a really difficult situation in terms of, you know, maintaining even their own existence. But they spent all their time and resources running around like drooling madmen and just trying to hunt down Jews at every corner. You know, it's like, what would you describe to someone who is genuinely interested in what actually really happened there? I mean, we know that there was horrible conditions in these work camps. The fact that a lot of people died, in the same way, there's a lot of Germans died as well, right? But is there any? I've heard this question before. I haven't looked into it that much, so I'm not sure about this. But I'm asking you because you might know. But is there any kind of documentation as to that we hear about anyway in terms of actual concentration camps that were specifically done for the eradication of Jewish people? Is there any documentation like this, as you've heard of?
Not that I have come across. They, interestingly enough, the only real death camps that are said to exist were behind Soviet lines after that country was divided up. So they reconstructed. They call them reconstructions of the gas chambers and the rest, and the. Basically, they're just complete fabrications. In some examples, you've got a chimney that's not even attached to the building. It's just for a photo shoot, for a photo op. This is such a huge, huge topic.
Sure, but yeah.
Long story short, a lot of what they have called death camps were actually transit camps, and they were moving Jews and others around to perform labor for the war effort. And so, there were, towards the end of the war, a number of Jews who were extremely emaciated. Some of them had died, but this was mainly due to typhus, which was, really running rampant during that time. And that's why people had to shave their heads, was to keep away lice and other bugs. And this is what Zyklon B was used for. It's a delousing agent. And I mean, that's why they had Zyklon B at all of these camps that weren't even labeled as death camps. It's because it was very useful to stop the spread of typhus. So in fact, Zyklon B was being used to save Jewish lives. And if you actually look into what a lot of the survivors of the so-called Holocaust had to say about their times at places like Auschwitz, you'll learn that there was a swimming pool for the inmates, that they had a theater, that they were putting on concerts. This is all detailed in the Eric Hunt's The Last Days of the Big Lie, where he took footage from Steven Spielberg's Shoah Foundation archives, where he just collected all of these different interviews with Jews about what they experienced during that time, the survivors. And of course, he didn't include these very revealing interviews in his final documentary that he put together from it, but the footage all still exists, and they talk about how they're just spending money at the canteen, that there was even a brothel in one of the places, and that swimming pool at Auschwitz, it still exists. They just don't take people by it on the tour, because then people will be asking questions about, well, if this is an extermination camp where allegedly 4 million Jews were killed, then why would they let them swim around? Why not just get to killing them? There was even a tale about how the SS guards were playing in a soccer game against the inmates.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I heard that too. That's right.
Yeah, so it's a completely different side of history that you're getting actually from Jews themselves, who aren't part of probably some larger conspiracy to hide the truth. What I think actually happened with a lot of these people is that they were being fed lies. Even while they were in these camps, they were getting stories about all of this, all these gas chambers and all the sorts of horrors that were happening to their fellow people. And because some of them would get shipped off and they would not see them again, they just assumed that they went to a death camp and were exterminated, when the actual Red Cross numbers, and people can just image search for this. The Red Cross had kept numbers as to deaths within these camps. It's somewhere in the hundreds of thousands range of how many Jews died in camps in Germany at the time. And as I said, we're dealing with a war where tens and tens and tens of millions of people, even in just the Soviet Union alone, died. I mean, even if that 6 million number was correct, why don't we hear anything about all of the rest of the tragedies, all of the other Holocausts? The Holocaust means a burnt offering. Well, what do you call Dresden? What do you call Hamburg and Berlin? And how about Hiroshima and Nagasaki? What about those crimes against humanity, against civilians? Why aren't those considered war crimes? Well, you know, we have these people hunting down these old Nazis, like the Simon Wiesenthal Center. Why aren't they going and hunting down the Soviet guards who murdered many, many millions of people? Why isn't this happening? Well, because it seems that Jews, rather than a Germanic death cult, they're in charge of what's going on right now. They wield an incredible amount of power in our world today. While Europeans, in general, even on the Allied side, seem to have lost World War II and lost their lands, who won? Who benefited? Well, the State of Israel was formed right afterwards. Yep. And then you had also the United Nations. And what has the United Nations really been pushing? It's been massive immigration into European lands. Europe before World War II was primarily white. Yes, there were some conflicts. Of course, I mean, this was what led up to World War I. There were conflicts, but it was still a very strong dominant force within the world. After World War II, all of the different colonization efforts of the different countries, they came to a crashing halt. Then the borders opened up, and people from those former colonies first started flooding in, and then basically all regulations were lifted. And if you can make it to Europe, you're going to be welcomed in now, and they're given all sorts of different welfare and aid that the citizens of the country themselves, the taxpayers, don't get.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's right. Yeah, we have very much the same situation in Sweden, of course, where I think it's probably one of the worst countries right now in the world when it comes to the suicide that is performed on its own people. And I think that even much what you said before as well, in terms of hate speech laws and everything else, that basically everyone else but except the Swedish people are protected under these laws. You can basically do anything you want to with the Swedish people in terms of those kinds of conditions that otherwise minorities would be helped at or aided in those kinds of situations. It's also true that basically anyone else who makes it into the country are they're working on this right now, I believe, to basically get them full Medicare, you know, or you know, medical health for free, you know, lodging, you know, hook them up with a place to live and everything else, while, of course, the Swedish people itself are struggling and fighting. But why don't we just talk a little bit about the background, what you think is the ideological reasoning behind this? Because I've heard so many different arguments in terms of anywhere from like, okay, you know, Europe has been the plague of the world, therefore they deserve it. You know, it has to do with like colonialism. Here we go again. You know, you're going to get punished for things that, you know, your fathers did, you know, 200 years ago. There's other concepts, of course, which goes into the fact that it's just a destruction of these nations in itself. But where do you stand on this, and how do we tackle some of these issues? What are some of the common kind of arguments for what we're seeing in the world now happening that you've heard, Kyle?
Well, one of the big ones in the United States is that white Americans enslaved black people, so now they have to pay forever. They're forever going to be giving out reparations to the blacks and to everyone else. But what's always neglected is that blacks, American Indians, Jews, all own slaves in America.
Yeah.
Jews in particular, if you read Who Brought the Slaves to America, played a crucial role in transporting all of these slaves to the transatlantic slave trade. They had a huge, huge interest in this. This was, you know, they were captaining the ships. They were owning the ships and profiting greatly off of this trade. But Jewish Hollywood will never mention this. They're just going to blame whites for everything. They'll also forget to mention that it was blacks who first sold other blacks into slavery, and that freed blacks in America owned slaves themselves. It's actually estimated that about 3,000 blacks owned a total of 20,000 black slaves in 1860,
mm-hmm.
so shortly before the Civil War.
Yeah.
So that's about 28% of free blacks owned slaves, and that's a very large percentage of blacks who own slaves, about 28%. And if you actually look at how many white Americans own slaves at the height of slavery, it's about 1.4%.
Yeah, wow. Exactly. Wow. I've heard that too. That's just extraordinary considering how everyone in America has to, you know, is held responsible for this now, basically, right?
And how did most Americans actually first come to this country as slaves or indentured servants,
yeah,
in bondage? And now people don't understand that there was literal enslavement of white people in the Americas. They think it's all indentured servants, and oh, they were just, you know, working as house servants for a few years, then they got some land. This is not the case. Some people were indentured servants, and yes, they were some of them did get free, some were worked to death. But they were not treated well at all. It's basically if you had a lease on a car for 7 years, you wouldn't care what that car looks like, operates like after those 7 years. You're going to get the most performance you can get out of them. But if you have to take care of that car for the rest of your life, well, then you're going to make sure it's treated a little bit better. So that's just my kind of analogy for,
right. Yeah.
You know, how they treated their white indentured servants. The Irish were enslaved en masse. They were also killed off en masse. Between 1641 and 1652, half a million Irish were killed by the English, and another 300,000 were sold as slaves. And this dropped the population of Ireland from 1.5 million to 600,000 in a decade.
Wow.
We don't hear about this, though. And of course, then there's the potato famine as well.
Yeah.
So a lot of those Irish slaves, they went to the Caribbean, Barbados, where they would work on sugar plantations before the blacks were brought in, because they basically found that blacks are able to work in the sun better than the pale-skinned Irish. And they're actually still Irish, the descendants of Irish slaves on in those islands today.
Hmm.
But let's talk about all the other slaves, white slaves, that have existed throughout the ages. You had over 1 million white slaves being taken by the Arab slave traders at the same time as the transatlantic slave trade. These were the Barbary Pirates of North Africa who went to Spain, France, Ireland, England, and even over to the American colonies and kidnapped white people and brought them back as slaves. The word slave even comes from Slav. Yep. The Slavs of Eastern Europe were enslaved by Asian Mongols. They were enslaved by Muslims. They were enslaved by the Ottoman Empire, by Jewish Khazars, and other non-white invaders throughout the years. The Ottoman Empire demanded 1,000 white babies every single year, and they would use these white male babies as their elite guard. They were known as the Janissaries, and a lot of people don't know this. Could you imagine having your newborn baby given to Muslims so that he could fight for them against your own people?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
I gotta
add that in here. I mean, the Arabs were some of the most ruthless slave owners you could imagine. I mean, one of the reasons, for example, why there is a large black population in America today and not in Arabia is because they actually used to cut off the genitals of the black males, and they used the women for sex slaves, whether they were black or white, you know, and there was just a tremendous and ruthless treatment of these people. And this is the only reason. And how often do we hear about this? When do we hear about how the Ottoman Empire have to pay reparations and how they have to become, all of Turkey has to become multicultural and pay for its, you know, debt to the world because of their treatment? No, they were even so ruthless that there aren't any people alive almost today in Arabia because of this reason. They used to be slaves, you know? So yeah, we never hear about this ever.
In Spain, the Moors, they demanded 100 white virgins from the white population every year. 100 white virgins given to the Moors to be used in their harems. And this obviously really infuriated the people of Spain, and they eventually were able to throw off the yoke of the Moors. But people don't understand that Europe has been invaded and conquered before. It's just that Europeans were able to push them back, and basically, our current understanding of history starts in 1492. Mm-hmm. We're not allowed to know any of the things that happened to European people. Only what European people did to the rest of the world,
right.
And we're being given this narrative so that we're made to feel guilty, that we're made to feel compliant. This is part of the white guilt. Another part of this, of course, is the colonization. Oh, you need to feel really sorry because your people colonized various lands. You need to, so this is being used as an excuse for genocide. Basically, when you bring up all of the different aspects of white genocide, what's taking place, people will often just say, well, you deserve it. You did it to the Indians. And now this is just justification of wrongs. It's also incredibly immoral and illegal under the Geneva Convention to apply collective punishment.
Mm-hmm.
White people are being collectively punished for what maybe a very small percentage of their ancestors did hundreds of years ago.
Well, you know what? I heard something else as well in terms of disease and things like that was brought to these various continents as expansion and just basically exploration occurred and as you moved into new territories. And again, people have to understand as well that this is the mindset of conquest and fight over territory and resources is just, that has been part of human nature. It's just what everyone did. Everyone were involved in this behavior to a lesser or greater extent. I guess it was just that some happened to be more successful at it at different times in the, you know, throughout history. But the fact is that, you know, we hear about, for example, how disease was brought to America and therefore, oh my God, they genocided all the Native Americans and everything else. As far as I know, there's nothing that suggests that this was intentional. There might be something like that. I'd love to see and read that. But the fact is, do you remember the bubonic plagues in Europe and the Black Plague and everything else?
Oh, yeah.
That was because we had Asians coming into Europe and we got new diseases. And I mean, what, half of the population in our countries were decimated too? What, since when do we ask for reparations for something like that, you know?
Right. Well, in Sweden, you actually had Jesse Jackson over there a few years ago.
Oh, man, don't remind me of this.
Saying that Swedes need to accept multiculturalism because hundreds of years ago, Swedes owned slaves. So that means that now they need to accept their displacement and their dispossession.
Yeah.
And I mean,
well, again, you know, let me comment on that quickly, because it's a really good point. What actually happened there is, of course, that they've done all these kinds of studies and trying to show, you know, because we were part of the Berlin Conference, right? Like every other country were at that time. And therefore we hold this kind of collective guilt. But I think even what he argued was that basically Sweden had become wealthy because of slaves, basically. So despite, I mean, this is brilliant logic, despite basically 40,000 years of people toiling in the north and surviving the harshest of conditions in the winter, trying to survive, has nothing to do with it. It turns out that it actually doesn't matter. It turns out that we held a colony from France for about, 10 years, a small, tiny island of St. Bartholomew in the Northeast Caribbean. And that's really the reason why Sweden got rich. You know, never mind the thousands of years of good work ethic to drag ourselves out of the mud and become one of the most, you know, fair and equal and prosperous nations in the world, to avoid wars and everything else. And then, of course, only now to have it destroyed in front of us just because of this is somehow logical that we now are to be punished because we attended, like everyone else, the Berlin Conference and held a small colony. I mean, that's the extent of the logic in this argument.
Well, Heinrich, we're being collectively punished for slavery, as I said, but we're never being collectively praised for ending slavery.
Yes.
White people in the Western world fought very hard to ensure that slavery does not exist. And I actually will argue that many of us are currently being enslaved in one form or another, but that's kind of a different story. We're never given credit for all of the great, amazing things that we have done. For example, in America, blacks have about 50 times the living standard that they have in any African nation. But yet all they do is basically spout anti-white propaganda that they're being oppressed, that we're holding them down, when they're basically living off the riches of the Western world, and you know, demanding reparations still. It's quite incredible. And I just want people to understand the reality of the situation, that there are racial differences, that people deserve a place of their own. They deserve to be able to freely associate. They don't deserve to be collectively punished and blamed for all of the world's problems. White people have been targeted as the group that has caused all of the problems of the world. And we mentioned slavery there, and they'll have these movies like 12 Years a Slave, Django Unchained, Amistad, about historical slavery. Of course, they're going to admit a lot. They're going to misrepresent and lie. But why don't they ever deal with the estimated 200 million people that are currently enslaved in our world today? There are up to 200 million people enslaved in the world today. And a lot of slaves in Israel. People should look into
white,
that as well.
White sex slaves. Yeah, definitely.
They
absolutely
come from Eastern Europe.
Yeah.
And We don't see a lot of movies about that now,
no,
do we?
No.
They just to harp on the past.
Well, exactly, because that breaks the narrative. I mean, there is a certain, you know, agenda at play here, and it goes in a certain way. And as soon as you begin to highlight history that kind of deviates from this and realize that, oh, okay, it's more complicated than that. There's more things going on in history. There's been different, times when everyone was subjected to the same treatment, etc. Then, nope, it gets too complicated. It breaks the meme and it breaks the narrative, and therefore smack it back into place again and just point names or argue that they're, you know, a bigot or whatever, and that's fine, right? And people fall in line in that, unfortunately, except, you know, they have to keep hammering away and show the the double standards. Not only that, but also the fact that there is so many little inconsistencies like this. Well, they're not little, but there are inconsistencies in history that shows that it's a very, very different story. I think that we are, if we don't understand history, if we do not realize what has happened, we are going to be, we're going to be enslaved by history to a certain extent, if I can put it that way, you know, and we're going to be used by it. And it's very unfortunate. I think it's very important for us to break that spell, for everybody, actually, to break that spell.
Mm-hmm. Well, Heinrich, we're being conditioned all of the time through the movies, the television shows, and just the general consensus reality about these racial relations. We're always being shown images of whites whipping slaves, of KKK lynching blacks, racist policemen just picking on black people, who didn't do anything. Of course, they'll even go so far as to call George Zimmerman a white Hispanic in order to drum up outrage against white people from the black community. Mm-hmm. That's how much they have to reach to try to find an example of white on black crime.
Right.
But I'll tell you what, you can find so many examples of black on black crime and black on white crime in America and elsewhere. And this is being completely underreported or unreported at the national level. There's actually a good quote here from Alan West, who's a black politician in the United States. And this is factually accurate. He said, black people kill more black people every 6 months than the KKK did in 86 years. Hmm. Why aren't Al Sharpton and Jesse Jackson and Barack Obama and Eric Holder, why aren't they actually trying to address this, to bring this to light, that there is an incredible amount of violence being committed by black people and that it should stop? Instead of actually focusing on that problem, they're going to make out the problem of America to be white racism, white supremacy. And this is not the case. The statistics, I guess, should be considered racist in their view. There was a report that was compiled in 2005 called the Color of Crime Report from Statistics in America, taken from FBI crime statistics. And it was adjusted for the different population sizes of racial groups, because in America, white people outnumber blacks something like 4-1. And so when you take that into consideration, it shows that blacks are 7 times more likely than other people of other races to commit murder and 8 times more likely to commit robbery. The single best indicator of violent crime levels in an area is the percentage of population that is black and Hispanic. Blacks are an estimated 39 times more likely to commit a violent crime against a white person than vice versa, and 136 times more likely to commit robbery. Blacks commit more violent crime against whites than against blacks. 45% of their victims are white, 43% are black, and 10% are Hispanic. When whites commit violent crimes, only 3% of their victims are black. Only 10% of youth gang members are white. So 90% of youth gang members are non-white. Hispanics are 19 times more likely than whites to be members of youth gangs. Blacks are 15 times more likely, and Asians are 9 times more likely. And one of the very telling statistics here is the amount of rape against white women from black men.
Where was the statistics from again? You said
this is called the Color of Crime Report, okay, which was taken from FBI crime statistics.
Right,
and it shows that something like an average of 34,000 white women are sexually assaulted or raped by black men each year. And a lot of people, authorities, think that this figure is at least twice the number reported. And if you look at the reverse, which is how many white men are raping black women, it's statistically zero, because it's less than 10 cases nationally.
You know, we had the same statistic. Now, we don't do the same, I think, racial denomination, whatever you want to call it, statistically in Sweden, unfortunately to a certain extent. But I know that as immigration has increased into Sweden, our rape rates have basically skyrocketed. And I know that there's some people who've actually bought the police records and gone through them name by name. I know one of these is Ingrid Karlqvist that we had on the program. And she did this specifically in the area of Malmö, southern Sweden, which is the most immigrant, dense area in Sweden at this point anyway. And she basically concluded, due to the names in itself, that it's that the immigration rate corresponds with the rate of Swedish women. And this is something which is never talked about. It's never discussed. If you bring it up, you're an evil racist. You're a hater of immense proportion, and we can't even tell you how much we dislike you. What will it take for people to begin talking about this? I mean, we have to recognize at some point that if this is an issue, we have to talk about it. This is somehow But somehow this is acceptable. This is somehow we can look the other way because it's uncomfortable for us or something. I mean, how do people justify any of this, do you think?
I don't know. I don't know what it's going to take to get people to finally wake up. I think when it happens to them or somebody that they love, it that could be the breaking point. It's expected in Sweden, from what I can tell, that 1 in 4 women will be raped in their lifetimes. And almost all of those cases will be from a non-white immigrant attacker.
It's a really good point, and I will mention this as well. We're going to take a break in a little bit here, but I want to mention this as well. That this comes as a two-pronged attack and tactic, and I want people to think about this, because think of what happened with Julian Assange in Sweden. That's a perfect example, right? But what that some people think about and saying, oh, it turns out that the Sweden has a it's much too easy to report your rape, right? Anyone can walk in and accuse anybody of it. And that's the reason why we have a heightened statistic, some people have argued. Well, I don't think that's true. I think I would actually argue like this, that it's a two-pronged assault. And one of these coincides with the fact that when Swedish girls have been raped, in some cases gang raped in the most horrific way, they are actually more prone not to report it because they do not want to repeat the trauma. They do not want to go through it. They actually just want to, you know, leave it behind them. And that's one of the reasons why actually very few of the cases actually are reported. Of course, at this stage, it would be very difficult to find the exact statistics on this. So I'm not going to go and cross that line and say, yep, all of those are immigrants or whatever. But the fact is, as I said before, if you look at the graphs of immigration and then the rape rates, you see that there is a corresponding line there, and something has to, you know, 2 and 2 equals 4. It's just how it is. You have to, you know, put that together. But on the other hand, you have a flip side to it, which is the Assange story, where basically some women now can basically report on men after the fact that they've had sex, and they say, you know, he didn't use a condom or whatever. And then you can go to the police and report them for rape, for example, which is kind of the flip side of it. So we've actually seen an attack on a lot of Swedish men because of the fact that you have a really staunch kind of feminist movement in Sweden as well, which is mm-hmm. helping to destroy the fabric of society. So I think we're getting it from both ends, if you see what I'm uh-huh. getting, Kyle. It's really bizarre, you know?
Well, is it true that many Nordic women up there are actually dyeing their hair from blonde to black so that they can avoid being targeted?
I've heard that, and I've yet to actually seen one of these cases myself. I don't know anybody, but I have heard it in passing. And I've seen people, of course, who've dyed their hair from blonde to dark. But whether that's a preference or not, I'm not sure. But I wouldn't be surprised, though. That's what I can say. I wouldn't be surprised at all.
Isn't it so interesting that these feminist groups and the other liberal, so-called leftist groups, just they hate the European man. They think he is the cause of all the problems.
Evil.
Yet they just love these Arab immigrants. They think that they are absolutely wonderful, can do no wrong. You've got groups like Femin. They recently had a stunt where basically they had written on them immigrants F better, let's say. Immigrants fuck better is what they said. And and written on their naked bodies while they're basically humping a globe. That was one of the photo ops that I saw. and what's just absolutely insanity is that these groups will promote homosexual rights. They'll promote liberation of women. But what are the Arabs, the Muslims, really all about? They don't like the homosexuals.
No.
They really don't seem to care too much for the European women. In fact, the Quran condones rather than condemns raping conquered peoples.
Yeah. I think they, in some way, they know that this means the destruction of the fabric of society. It unfortunately plays into the Marxist agenda. And I think a lot of these groups are kind of piggybacking on each other to a certain extent to actually make sure that the West and Europe in particular is destroyed. I mean, I can't help to see it in any other way. I mean, it's just horrible to see how this happens. And I mean, you're right. I mean, to see how they're coming together over certain of these issues when you realize that, like, you know, the rights that they're demonstrating for is something which is completely outlawed in some of the other, you know, Islamic countries out there in the world. So we have a conquest on our hands. And I think a lot of people are still not getting this because they might come from a perspective where they are peaceful, they're loving, they love different cultures, they think all of this is great. But the fact is, I think that you're going to generate a tremendous amount of problems and issues, specifically when we talk about religion, but not only that, we're talking about of culture. We're talking about people who have developed in different geographical locations over thousands of years in different parts of the world, and then basically taking them and smashing them together and somehow thinking that this is going to turn out to this wonderful, peaceful rainbow nation. It's just, I mean, it's beyond naive, in my opinion. I don't know what they're thinking, you know?
Yeah. And they're spending taxpayer dollars to propagandize the people into not only just accepting the immigrants into their lands, because we are a fairly tolerant people as white Europeans. And we do like to help out those people who are unfortunate, that come from war-torn nations. Because, yeah, well, the Zionist-occupied governments of the Western world have been creating a whole lot of havoc in the Middle East, which is really helping these people to flood in, or giving them reason to. And especially when you're incentivizing it with all of the different benefits that they get, they're just going to be flooding right in. But not only are they paying for different campaigns to ensure that this happens, they're also spending a lot of money to make sure that the different races mix together. There was a music video in Sweden, Blonda Up, I believe is what it was called.
Mix Up. I mean, I saw that too, and it's obvious that it's part of a humor skit. That one of those, you know, I think it was just a wrap up of a program or whatnot. But that's not uncommon though. Just as you kind of noted there, that it's not a. It, as we know, you know, everything. We look at any Hollywood movie that comes with wrapped in a comedy, right? Some of those are the most propagandized versions you can get of, you know, imposing morals on people or opinions and everything else. And I think this kind of very much goes hand in hand with that. You're using comedy to kind of break through those barriers, if you will, right?
Mm-hmm. Well, sure, they're doing it through that, and also through basically policy as well.
Yeah.
And they state their objectives. They state that their objectives are white genocide. For example, French President Nicolas Sarkozy, he said in a speech while he was in office, "What is the goal? It's going to be controversial. The goal is to meet the challenge of racial interbreeding that faces us in the 21st century. It's not a choice. It's an obligation. It's imperative." And then he goes on to say, "If this volunteerism does not work for the Republic, then the state will move to still more coercive measures."
Yeah, I remember that quote we linked it up not too long ago, and it comes actually hand in hand with some of the ideologies out of the European Union, like Kudenhof Kalergi, who actually also talked about this, who's one of the founders of the Pan-European Union. But before we run ahead of ourselves here too much, Kai, let's take a short break here. I want to pick up and talk more about, you know, AIPAC-run foreign policy in America. I want to talk about who kind of is driving the agenda when it comes to creating basically global chaos that now is leading to this situation where we see this tremendous upheaval and migrations of people. And we're kind of in an era right now where something is being done that we never really seen before in the history of the world, really, not to this extent and not in this way anyway, which is very interesting. I mean, I see it as a live kind of experiment, but it's been really interesting hearing about some of the history that you've talked about. We seldom hear this side of the story, which is of course even more important than that we actually get to talk about it and get it out there so people can think about it and contemplate it, and of course go further themselves, look into this and see if these arguments that you've heard from Kyle hold any water. I think it's really important that people do that. But Kyle, give us your website and tell us a bit what you're doing right now before we take a break here.
Sure. It's renegadebroadcasting.com. We have live radio every single night from different hosts on the network. We do one show per night, usually at 8 p.m. Eastern Standard Time in America. And we have hosts that cover a whole lot of different topics and some really good programs coming out. I go on Sunday nights at 8 p.m. and people can check me out. It's a show titled The Solar Storm. I had the Blitzkrieg broadcast before that. I had to take a break for a little while after I basically founded what was known as the White Man March, which hopefully we can get into in the second hour as well.
Sure.
And discuss what kind of responses we got from that in America and actually all around the world.
Very good. Let's do that. Renegadebroadcasting.com. Check that out. We'll have the links up on the website as well, of course. And we'll be right back with Kyle Hunt. We'll pick up and continue our conversation. So stay with us, everybody.